This podcast is sponsored by the Joseph Nightingale Company of Inflatable Pulpits. Are you a minister forced to stay home from your flock by that demonic Chinese COVID-19 virus who is in need of a pulpit to stand behind while you preach to your congregation via a Zoom video or that sin-ridden book face live? Contact the Joseph Nightingale Company, and they will send you one right away from their factory to your doorstep. Just open the box, and the pulpit will automatically inflate to a standard pulpit size, complete with a neon cross on the front. Neon cross light bulbs sold separately. Microphones to your laptop computer can affix right to the Joseph Nightingale inflatable pulpit, or you can just use your normal, extremely loud preacher voice and use the Joseph Nightingale inflatable microphone. Just like the Joseph Nightingale inflatable pulpit, the Joseph Nightingale inflatable pulpit microphone, also sold separately, automatically inflates and attaches with included clips. The clips may look like normal paper clips, but really are special, so don't be fooled. All material used to make Joseph Nightingale inflatable pulpits and Joseph Nightingale inflatable microphones are created by the children at our Joseph Nightingale Bible Work Camp in Brazil from used medical face masks and are certified COVID-19 free by our in-house faith healers certified by the Joseph Nightingale Faith Healing Institute of Coral Gables, Florida. To get your Joseph Nightingale inflatable pulpit, just look for their website on the dark web. Take a leap of faith and try Joseph Nightingale's inflatable pulpit today. Don't forget to ask about our megachurch bulk discount offers. Hi, whoever you are. Out there in the great wide world of self-quarantining and social distancing, my name's Chase Peoples, and I don't know what I'm doing. I've just decided I wanted to create a podcast because I love them. I love podcasts. I love how intimate they are. I love listening to them all the time, and I've been wanting to do one for a long time. And I guess right now I've got the time to do it, whether anybody listens to it or not. So if you do exist and are listening, hi, thank you. I'm really glad you're here. I've been thinking about doing a podcast for a long time, calling it the Save Me Podcast. And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, out of everybody in the world admitting the selfishness of wanting to be saved right now from a lot of things. I thought up the title back in sunnier, more communal times when I was just a minister in a struggling mainline, meaning historically American church that's not evangelical, struggling to keep a church together, to keep the budget going, struggling to not completely burn out and failing, especially at that last one. I was looking, kind of expressing a need to be saved from viewpoints of scarcity, trying to convince people that our God really is a God of abundance and we don't have to be so afraid all the time, feeling like my saying that was just falling on deaf ears. Well, as it turned out, I needed more saving than I thought, because at the end of January this year, I was forced to resign from that church, and I've been unemployed since. Now it's the tail end of March. And so I don't really know what I'm going to be doing career-wise and where I'm going next. So I could sure use some heavenly signposts of where to go toward salvation or a job. And then this whole COVID-19 thing happened, and we all need saving from this terrifying disease as we wait for it to break and hope to flatten the curve. So I'm going to start this podcast. And I don't really know yet how often I'm going to put it out. I hope at least once a week. This first one was originally designed to be a video sermon for clergy only that I was going to post on social media. But I don't have a good camera, only an iPhone, and I don't film selfies of myself very often. And the video was terrible. I filmed it outside. You couldn't hardly see my face against a gray, cloudy background. It was all fuzzy. It just looked bad. And so I decided to strip the audio out of it and just put it in a podcast and make it my first episode. I thought it would be a sermon for clergy because I really see a lot of my minister colleagues and friends scrambling around trying to figure out how do you do church and ministry when you can't be within 6 feet of each other or in crowds of more than 10. But I kind of rattled on too long. I guess I had too many thoughts in my head, and it's too long to be a sermon. But it is meant to be an encouraging word, or words, a lot of words, for clergy and for minister friends of mine. And if anybody else gets anything out of it in terms of anything else being relevant to their lives, that's great too. But this first episode is especially for clergy. And so we'll see. This podcast is a work in progress. We'll see what comes of it. I feel the need to put it out there in the universe. Hopefully that's the spirit prodding me. Maybe it's just my ego. And what I have to offer isn't unique or helpful. It could just be a coping mechanism for me right now as I deal with vocational and financial terror as well as existential fear of COVID-19. Maybe you can identify with the need to have somebody save you. I grew up a conservative Southern Baptist that was totally focused on individual salvation, which meant saying the magic words of prayer and accepting Christ as my Lord and Savior so I would get a ticket to heaven. As I grew up and my theology expanded, my view of salvation also changed, of what it meant. Less individualistic, much more communal, much more here and now, and not so much pie in the sky later. So I guess calling this podcast Save Me is a little bit tongue-in-cheek about what saving meant. When I was growing up, getting other people saved seemed a whole lot more like convincing them that your agenda and beliefs were right and theirs were utterly wrong. I don't particularly pretend to have any answers, but maybe you can identify with that feeling of wanting somebody to save you right now. And I'll give you a hint. Whoever's going to save you, it's not me. But I appreciate you listening anyway. This podcast is also brought to you by Crooksberry Books online bookstore. Are you a dying mainline church in need of transformation without your members having to sacrifice anything or change anything about the way they've done church for the last 75 years or so? Then Crooksberry Books is the online bookstore for you. Crooksberry offers the latest titles by the very few pastors who actually lead growing churches, all megachurches, in our mother denomination. Try one of their titles, like The Holy Vacuum Cleaner, How to Suck Up Members, Leaders, and Most Importantly Money from Dying Neighboring Churches, by megachurch pastor Adam Williamson. Or how about this title, by megachurch pastor Jimmy Massacre, 39 Things Your Church Is Absolutely Doing Wrong, 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 because they're not the way my church does it. Are you struggling with how to keep your church afloat during these trying times of social distancing? Then how about James Bob O'Sneeze's latest bestseller, Just Give Up, and Become Another Satellite Location for My Church? You may be wondering about how to lead your church when members on the political right or left keep wanting you to take a stand on hot-button social issues that are sure to alienate one side of the church or the other? Then Crooksberry Books is glad to offer you its brand new title, Let's Wait Until the Capital Campaign is Done. 10 Ways to Dodge Taking Divisive Stands on Tough Issues. Because after all, Jesus never said or did anything controversial. This one's by Pentecostal powerhouse Paula Whitehouse. Order these books now at crooksberry.edu via our online Bible College bookstore website, which we are still constructing. We are glad to send you ebooks if you're afraid of catching the coronavirus from your UPS man.
If your UPS man happens to be a UPS woman, then you are already eternally doomed for your immoral gender preferences. By ebooks, we mean photocopies of all our titles run through our 1996 HP PhotoSmart scanner one page at a time. We will email them to you as a really big Microsoft Paint file. Warning: you need to have Windows ME running on your personal computer to download this file. Make sure you try Crooksberry Books today. Hi, clergy friends and people I don't know. I'm Chase Peoples. I'm a minister in Kansas City. I decided that since I'm at home and not doing much, I would write a sermon of sorts for my clergy friends. After being in a pulpit almost every Sunday for 19 plus years, I'm not serving a church right now. It's pretty interesting, to say the least, to be at home, social distancing, and to watch so many of my clergy friends who are struggling during this time to try to lead and care for their congregations while being unable to gather together. I've been watching, peeking in on a lot of services, getting live streamed, taking note of Zoom meetings of clergy support group, seeing people doing teleconference meetings with their church councils and that kind of thing. I just want you to know that I see your pain of wanting to lead people and connect with people, to know that doing so via technology is really no substitute for being with people face to face. I've also seen, we might call, the inequalities of churches, that richer churches, or maybe ones with bigger budgets at least, have better technology than a lot of smaller churches that are learning how to stream for the first time. I see your struggles. So I wanted to try to offer you something during this time when you're trying to offer pastoral care via phone call rather than being embodied with someone and present with them. I wanted to give you a few thoughts that I hope will be encouraging, might even be some fodder for future streaming sermons for you. Hopefully will give you some perspective, because I'm wondering who's watching out for you right now as you try to watch out for so many. If you don't know me well, I want to let you know I'm not an expert. I'm not a seminary professor. I'm not a consultant. I'm just a minister who's not even in a church right now. And so my thoughts aren't really any more special than anybody else's, and probably less special. But I felt the need to offer this and throw this out there in the universe in hopes that the Spirit might use it to encourage some. One of the things I've been doing is trying to do all the self-care stuff that we as clergy are taught to do, and so many of us just don't do well. It's an epidemic among people in the caring professions for us not to lead balanced lives, even though we know, right? We know that we'll be better caring professionals if we take care of ourselves, but it's so easy not to do it. And so maybe in this time, I want to encourage you to maybe do all those things that you've been neglecting. That self-care stuff like exercise, eating better, taking time to have fun, taking time to meditate and pray, and really use this as a time for you to restore your batteries and to take in the energy from God so that you can try to offer it to other people. Because right now, we need new inspiration from God. We need new ideas, and we need clergy trying new things. If you're going to have energy to try to encourage your flocks, a whole lot of which are not open to new things, then you got to make sure that your pipeline back to God is filling you up so that you've got something to give to others. You've got to work, and I've got to work on making sure our own security is found in God. Because as this epidemic right now is proving, really everything we take as solid and eternal is not. It all ends. It's all mortal. And it all can be taken away in an instant. All the things we take security in. It really reveals the truth that we know, but we don't really internalize and live out of, that the only thing that we can be secure about is God. Yesterday I read Psalm 136, and like 26, 28 times, I forget, one each verse, there's the refrain that says, God's love endures forever. It just says it over and over again. After I read it, I kind of thought, geez, it's repetitive, but it's almost like the poet knew that we needed to hear that refrain over and over again to actually let it sink in, that God's love endures forever. Nothing else does. Only the love of God that we manifest in the lives of other people. That's it. Nothing else lasts. And anytime we put security and want to trust in other things before God, we're setting ourselves up for a real disappointment. You know, that psalm is so repetitive, saying over and over again, God's love endures forever. It sort of reminds me of pop song that goes on too long. The one that bugs me the most is, I think, of Foreigner's 1984 hit, I Want to Know What Love Is. That song must go on for like 39 minutes with Lou Gramm just singing over and over again, I want to know what love is. It's like, go back to your 70s rock tunes. This power ballad, it's driving me crazy. Somebody show that guy what love is, because it's way too repetitive. Maybe it's the time where we need to hear the refrain of that song too. In showing people what love really looks like, what the love of God looks like in this time. Look, I have experienced many a winter Sunday morning where I and maybe the chair of the board had to make the call about whether to cancel church for snow or ice. And every time we did it, we always knew that we would get criticism from both sides. There would always be that church member who would say, what are you closing church for? We can't close church. Usually it was somebody who was older and had no business going out in bad weather and would probably break a hip climbing the church steps. And then we'd have other people that would say we were doing too little, that this was a catastrophe, that we need to take more preventative measures. And so I just want to acknowledge the place that you're in as clergy, that during a time like this, you may be getting it from both sides. From people who feel like you are not being cautious enough and people who feel like you are overreacting. What I hope you're doing is trusting what the medical professionals are saying and that you can be strong enough to make the best decisions and to not to meet, to not be together, to just let the criticism that comes from either end just slide off of you. You're human. You're doing the best you can. So is our entire society right now. You're not going to get it all 100% correct. And there's a lot of fear out there and anxiety that gets projected on you as clergy. I know it firsthand. You just need to let that go. And know you're not alone. Every minister in the country is dealing with this right now. So is every store manager, restaurant owner, medical professional. Everybody's doing their best. And so you can give other people grace and be compassionate to them when they lash out at you. I've already experienced some parent shaming. You're not doing enough to protect your child during this pandemic. And then I've also experienced some other end of people saying you're overreacting, trying to wrap your kid in bubble wrap or something. Well, look, to make a decision in uncertain times means you're going to get it from somewhere. So be gracious to yourself. Be compassionate to those who criticize. Try to realize that it really is about them and their fear and their panic and not about you. Your security is not found in whether everybody in your church approves of you right now. Your only security is found with God, who is gracious to you, whether or not you're gracious with yourself or your church people are gracious towards you right now. So I want to invite you to think about the opportunity that we have. I've heard a lot of ministers in sermons, you know, using the examples that we're seeing on YouTube of what the Italians are doing in a lot of cities where they come out on their balconies and play music and sing together, trying to find a way to connect even though they are apart. In the same way, I've seen video of people in Tehran, Iran, where it's being hit horribly. and who were coming out to sing and to dance at certain times at their apartment building windows. I've also seen the YouTube videos of theater kids who aren't getting to do their spring productions in high schools, belting out their musical numbers so that other people can share in. I think those are great examples to use with your church to maybe inspire you to try to think of ways that you can try to connect in spite of our distance with your church folks. Having a Zoom meeting online where you pray together, I think could still be meaningful. Inviting church people to make calls for one another, so it's not just you calling everybody, but helping your church folks to come out of their fear and their isolation, their hoarding of toilet paper, to start thinking about ways they can give back. It's interesting to me that I've seen a lot of press, at least where I am in Kansas City, about restaurants, businesses who are volunteering and doing a lot. One great barbecue joint here in Kansas City had an open lunch where they made box lunches of barbecue and slaw and sides just for restaurant workers who had lost their jobs due to restaurants closing down. And they made hundreds of meals and offered it to those who came in with pay stubs. What I'm not hearing about, and I'm sure they exist, but I haven't heard as much about churches stepping up. And I'm wondering if that's because our churches were already in survival mode before the pandemic came. I'm wondering if there already were churches that were more focused inward rather than outward, more focused on keeping their building repaired than they were about actually using their building for ministry to other people. Churches that were more interested in bringing in new people just to prop up their budgets rather than viewing people in a compassionate way, the way God looks at them. And I know there are churches that are struggling out there. If you've got elderly members who are probably your biggest givers, and they aren't meeting, they're the ones that are more likely to be putting their giving weekly in the offering plate. They aren't using electronic giving or apps or bill pay. So you may be dealing with budgets that deal with your own paychecks and your own staff paychecks. And I don't want to pretend like those struggles aren't hard, but I hope that you'll be inspired to realize in this time of fear and seeming scarcity, we still worship a God of abundance. And there is still plenty to share and to go around. And this can be a time of transformation for your church, where your church can actually begin to look outward and to do some thinking about ways they can actually add value to their community, rather than expecting their community to come inside the church's doors to add value to the church's budget. This is a time where churches that are able to and clergy who are able to can inspire their people to think new thoughts, to think about what can we do to check on our neighbors. The great thing about technology right now is you can use your Nextdoor app to begin checking on neighbors and finding out needs in your neighborhood. And you can find out folks who are elderly and maybe don't want to go shopping, and your church people could have something to do to get out of the house with their kids and go shopping for folks who can't leave their home. This can be an opportunity for your church people to find folks who have underlying medical conditions in their neighborhoods, who are immunosuppressed, that you can begin checking on them and caring for them. You can become a vital part of your neighborhood, and your community can expand. And this can be an opportunity to grow and to be missional and to realize that this is exactly the time when God is calling churches to do more rather than for churches to do less. This is also a time where you, when you're offering care to people, I know have to manage, you know, grief and even moments of joy. I heard an Italian reporter talking about all the folks singing on balconies and stuff in Italy, especially in Rome. And she shared about a friend whose father had died to COVID-19. And that friend had said that if their neighbors started singing or playing their accordions, she would climb over to their balcony and punch them in the nose. Such was her grief. And so you as clergy have to walk a delicate line of trying to find ways for your folks to connect, while also offering pastoral care over the phone or via email or Skype or something else. And that's a hard line to walk. But I hope as you offer comfort and you remind your people that God is with them, that you will also challenge them, that this is a time for us to rethink everything. What really matters? What good is all that energy we spend keeping up with the Joneses down the street when we can't go out and we have to keep social distancing? What good is all the money we spend trying to impress other people when we can't enjoy things like going to the country club or going to the yacht club or going on vacation or going to our second house? What good is any of that when you can't enjoy any of it? What does it add to your life? As Jesus said, none of that stuff adds one more minute to your life. And that all the hoarding we're doing, even though there really is no shortage of groceries, it may make us feel better to feel like we're doing something. But it just reminds me of Jesus' parable about the rich fool who built bigger barns to hold his stuff and it was all wiped away. This is a chance for people to think about their loved ones, their families, about what they do for livings, about what any of it matters, to rethink the blessings of being together in community, to rethink the blessings of what it means to just walk outside without fear. This is an opportunity for all of us to rethink things. And it's especially a time for us to rethink the injustices in our culture. The writer and former minister Eric Minton had a great column this past week where he wrote about the idea expressed in the Torah, the idea of leaving the corners of your field, the grain there for the poor people to come and have food to eat. You also see it in the book of Ruth. And he said the modern day equivalent during COVID-19 is that we would actually leave toilet paper behind, or canned goods, or bread, or milk, instead of hoarding what as much as we can whenever we get it, so that other people might have enough to eat and to share and to do whatever they need. That this is an opportunity for us who call ourselves people of God to actually practice some restraint, where it's not all about us first, but it's about all of us together. It's not just about me and mine, but you and yours and us and ours. There was a great article put out by Sojourners by a woman named Liv Theoharis. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing her name. She works with William Barber and is the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. And she was describing what plagues mean, especially in the Hebrew prophets. And in that great article, she pointed out that God uses those plagues, although I would differ and say that unlike the biblical prophets, I don't think I would say that God causes plagues like COVID-19, but God makes use of them to cause us to question our society, to look at the injustices. We get the opportunity to question those in power who, like in Jeremiah's day, cry peace, peace, when there is no peace, who try to make a lie truth, and the truth they want to label a lie. This is our opportunity to rethink the way our society is ordered, and for us as clergy to call our congregations to say, have you thought about why it is that so many schools' first concern when they're closing is all the kids who are on free and reduced lunches? Why are there so many children who are hungry without those free lunches in school? What sort of just society lets children go hungry on this massive scale? And what does it mean when our politicians vote repeatedly to cut the funding for those free school lunches and nobody says a thing? This is our chance to rethink how we function normally. What does it mean to have a private health industry that excludes millions upon millions from having care? What does it mean when we read about all of these people who are losing their job because restaurants close, because their stores close, and we understand the truth behind the statistics that nearly 140 million people in our culture are only one paycheck or one medical emergency away from poverty? What Lev Theo Harris wrote is true, that what God said to the Hebrew prophets then is true now, that when plagues come upon us, the idea is not just to make it through and go back to business as usual, but the idea is to rethink everything about our society works so that when this is over, we can create a new society and a new way of operating that is just, and that rebuilds the foundations of love and grace that God has always intended should have been there all along. So as you preach over Zoom or Skype or go to meeting, offer your pastoral comfort, but have the courage to challenge your people to rethink and to look out beyond their own fear for their neighbors, close and far away, who are in need. Help them to see that they have the power to make a difference right now, and that, in turn, will help them to turn away from their fear and realize what they can do, even while we're social distancing. At the beginning of my little sermon here, I spoke about self-care. This is your time to not give in to fear and frantic doing for doing's sake so you can prove that you're still doing something even though church services are canceled. Let's face it. Most church people don't know what their pastor does anyway, so they certainly don't know what you do during the coronavirus outbreak. There's going to be critics. There always are. But this is your chance to reassess your relationship with your church, with your ministry, and with God. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal that I picked up, and it was a writer and a counselor who was the author. After COVID-19 hit in New York, she had to stay home with her kids. One of her kids said to her, "Mommy, I love COVID-19. And she said, "Why?" Kind of horrified. And she said, "Because we get to stay home and I get to be with you, Mommy. When COVID-19 isn't here, I don't get to be with you." This is a chance for all of us, especially clergy, to reevaluate our lives and our priorities. I just got forced out of a church I'd been at for 7.5 years, and it was painful. But on the day that it happened, and I gathered around my kitchen table with my family, I had a beautiful moment, even though I was hurting and frightened about the future. We held hands, and I looked at my wife and my sons, and I said, "This is all we need. If we have each other and God, that's all we need." And my 13-year-old looked at me, and he said, "Dad," he said, "I'm glad you're not going to be the minister anymore. You're always worried about church. You're always stressed out. I want you to not be so worried and stressed and bothered all the time, because you're no fun to be with that way." It's pretty indicting. It's what my wife has been telling me for years about not being present at home with her and my boys, because I'm always have been worried about church stuff. My ending with my last church was really painful, and I didn't see it coming. But since that time, even before the coronavirus hit, I've thought about all that stuff I've heard about self-differentiation, about how I was enmeshed emotionally too much with what was going on at church, trying to fix everything that wasn't mine to fix, that there were things that were going on that were unhealthy, that no matter how hard I tried, I wasn't going to be the one to change it. I couldn't control everything. I've realized that I could have saved myself a lot of grief, been more present with my family. Maybe the outcome would have been the same, probably would have been the same. But I've realized how much I let my identity be about that job. And I think that although for us as ministers, our calling is our jobs, that is always secondary to our calling just to be good Christians and to care for ourselves and our families and just to be a decent person in the world. And that our worth is not based upon everybody's approval at church, but instead our worth is based only upon our identity in God. And so this is your chance, it's my chance, to think about who we really are, what matters, and to step back. For those of us who need to, for those of us who have been locked in unhealthy relationships with our congregations and they with us, this can be a time to breathe, to rediscover who we are, what makes us have fun, brings us joy. And I hope that this can be that time for you, even as you still struggle to minister to your congregation, that you will use this time and overcome your fear with God's help, to use it to help you to be a more well-rounded person, a person who happens to be a minister, and not the other way around. Psalm 136 says repeatedly, "The love of God endures forever." The love of God endures forever. Nothing else is eternal. Not your church, not its building, not your ministries. Only the love of God that comes through you will last. That's it. I know that this time is going to hurt a lot of churches that were already struggling. But the truth is, there were a lot of churches that are already dying. And no matter how hard you overfunction, no matter how hard you kill yourself with 60, 80-hour weeks, they're still going to die no matter how hard you work. And so this is a chance for you to reassess what being faithful means as a Christian first and as a minister second, and to realize that Christ is the one who saves us. We are not the saviors. And there are going to be some churches hurt by this who will never come back. But that is not what you can control. All you can do is be faithful and show God's love, because in the end, that is the only thing that will endure forever. So I'm going to give you the benediction that I always gave every Sunday for years and years at the churches I served. May the strength of Christ go before you to prepare your way. May the grace of Christ come behind you to finish what you must leave undone. May the peace of Christ surround you in this present moment. May the love of Christ guide your every word, your every thought, and your every deed, even in scary times like this. Amen. You're not alone. God is with you, and there are so many clergy friends who are struggling just like you are. You can do this with God's help. You can make it through this time with God's help. Just remember, the only thing that endures forever is God's love. Interstitial music is "Psych Delicacy" by Doug Maxwell, retrieved from the YouTube audio library.